Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to the 2018 Healthcare Business Women's Association podcast series. My name is Julie Kelly, and I'm a HBA volunteer leader and your host for our show today. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the HBA is a global nonprofit organization comprised of individuals and organizations from across the healthcare industry committed to achieving gender parity in leadership positions, facilitating career and business connections, and providing effective practices that enable organizations to realize the full potential of the female talent. Now, our OAP program series this year is titled A Mosaic of HBA Talent Advancing the Healthcare Industry. And in this series, we're exploring emerging job roles and trends in the workplace of our ever-changing healthcare industry. Our discussion today is titled Real World Insights, Evolving Leadership Roles in Big Data. We've come a long way since DDD and Exponent Data, haven't we? In the healthcare industry, data rules. You know, as budgets tighten and regulations increase, now more than ever, every decision made must be supported by sound data. The data sets are many, but integrating the disparate data sets takes talent as information science leaders, and we happen to have two outstanding leaders joining our call today that are also HBA volunteer leaders, and that's Dr. Lisa Morris, who is the Vice President of Real World Insight at IQVIA, and Dr. Victoria Gammerman, who is the Head of Analytics at Boehringer Ingelheim, known as BI. Welcome, Lisa and Victoria.
Thank you. Thank you, Julie.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Yeah. Well, let's find out a little bit about our guest before we get into this discussion. Now, Lisa, you've been a volunteer leader for the HBA for quite some time. Can you share some of the roles and experiences that you've had with the HBA?
Absolutely. I think that my first experience was I was IQVIA's Rising Star in 2005. So it was a great opportunity to be recognized at the Woman of the Year event and be recognized by my company as a Rising Star. I then did a little bit of volunteer work probably for around the following decade, doing work at individual events, helping to get some events sponsored at IQVIA. And in 2014, I decided to take on a larger role. So from 2014 to 2015, I was the director at large for Mentoring for Greater Philly. It was a pretty exciting time because we were starting up the mentoring program in Greater Philadelphia. In 2016 to 2017, I moved over to be the director at large for Corporate Relations, still within the Greater Philadelphia chapter. And in 2018, I joined a regional council role, still focused in on corporate relations. Really thought it was a great opportunity as we were building a new kind of go-to-market model, if you will, on how we're interacting with our corporate partners and other companies that we would like to get more involved in HBA. So I've had a great opportunity to use a lot of my business leadership skills in mentoring and in corporate relations.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. And certainly we appreciate your volunteer leadership and everything you've done to support HBA. Now, Victoria, highlight your HBA career, if you would, please.
Absolutely. So thank you, Lisa and Julie, for your service to HBA. I'm a newer member to HBA. I've been a member for just a few years now. When I started, I was a member of the New York Metro chapter. I then became a volunteer for their marketing and communications group last year. And this year, we had a very exciting shift where in Fairfield County, Connecticut, we started a Fairfield County, Connecticut chapter. So I volunteered to be the director at large of marketing and communications there, bringing my experience from the New York metro area into that role. If anyone is interested in learning more about our new chapter, please feel free to reach out. But I'm really excited to discuss this topic with you both today.
Great. And, you know, I was president of Metro in 2010 and very active on the board there. So one of the goals was always to get a chapter going in Fairfield. So thank you for your leadership there, for taking on that role, and welcome. We like volunteers of all ages and all skill sets. So there's my promo for the HBA. So on to data. So, Lise, let's start with you. How did you get interested in information science data? Lisa?
Sorry, Julie. Seemed like a little blip there. I'm a pharmacist by training, and then did my graduate work in health economics and pharmaceutical marketing because I realized that there was a lot to understand about populations as opposed to sort of individuals, where as a healthcare provider, we oftentimes think about individuals, but I seem to be more interested in populations, and then that interest in populations sort of quickly translates into wanting to understand about the underlying data, about patterns that we might see in different populations that would help us to get better health outcomes.
Wow, interesting. So you started as a pharmacist, so when did you know that you were going to make it a career being in data?
My first job out of graduate school was at a large insurer, and I spent half of my time doing work for the insurance company around treatment outcomes, and I spent half of my time doing work for the pharmaceutical industry, very similar work, but looking at the outcomes associated with their pharmaceuticals. And I just sort of fell in love with being able to use the secondary data and being able to see sort of two different use cases for the same data, one to improve our delivery of healthcare on the insurance side, and then on the other side, how we could better inform our industry partners around the outcomes associated with their drugs.
Great. So you knew pretty soon into your career, you skipped the prescription filling and you went right to the data.
Yes.
Correct? Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I can sum it up quickly. Hey, Victoria, share with us, how'd you get interested in information science?
Sure. So in very similar, actually, approach to Lisa, was interested in healthcare as an overall field. And I thought at first, going down the traditional medical route would be the right path for me. But I always hesitated to give up my passion for mathematics. I was always really good at math, a little nerdy, a little geeky, and it was something I really loved. So I then did a master's degree in mathematics, and I took a few courses at the time in biostatistics, which for me fit like a glove because it allowed me to pursue that love of analytics and data, but apply it to the very specific use case of healthcare. And then I went on to complete a master's and a PhD before joining the pharmaceutical industry.
Well, so like Lisa, you knew pretty soon that you wanted to be in a career of data, and data really grabbed you. So early on,
absolutely,
you were sold. Absolutely. So Victoria, tell me, what skills are required for a career in data and analytics information science, if you will?
So I would say from my perspective, there are certainly two very important soft skills. One is this interest in problem solving. We're sometimes working with messy data or disparate data, as you had mentioned in the beginning, mm-hmm. where we have various analytic solutions that need to be implemented. And the second soft skill I would say that I find is very useful is the ability to be able to communicate. You need to clearly understand the problem at hand. You need to have a simple way to articulate a sometimes complicated analytical solution, and you need to be able to concisely summarize that solution to demonstrate how it really answers the business need. There's also, a couple of technical skills that are necessary, some statistical analytical background, especially when you need to check model assumptions. And although you might not be programming yourself, you may have a programmer you work with, you need to have an understanding of that programming language or software to understand that some of the options might affect the algorithm and the solution that you're providing. And Lisa had mentioned, having some of that medical and business understanding will really help to answer a question and demonstrate how that is a solution for the customer.
Wow. Hey, Lisa, do you have anything to add to that? Any other skills that you could layer on that?
Yeah, I think I would just echo the business understanding, because I think if I look through, my career and people who have really been able to make a difference in their organizations, they bring that understanding of the business to then help the business leaders translate the outcome of those models to something that is tangible or that they can develop a tactical plan around. So clearly understanding the business and the business problem can help to set you apart in your career and being able to take those complex, very mathematical equations and help your leaders of your organization understand how you're going to use the output that you've gotten through all of that methods and data science and cleansing of the data.
My goodness, it really sounds really smart, and I'm not worthy. I'm sorry, doctors. But anyway, I like that we have people like you to bridge this gap between the data and the business. What's the application? You're doing some really high-level analysis, but again, what does that mean to the business? And I'm going to say that's how you can have a successful career in information science. You guys also or both have your PhDs. I didn't hear anyone mention that. And Lisa, I think you mentioned to me that's another thing that you would recommend, correct, in terms of training?
Absolutely. I think that some of it probably depends on what orientation you want to take. So in mm-hmm. a number of the sort of health economics or epidemiology, drug safety, biostatisticians, that advanced degree is often mm-hmm. Looked upon. It's probably less of a requirement in the commercial applications, but I've worked in both sides, and I'm happy that I had my PhD for both of those, where I probably lean more against that training in one area versus the other, but still was a great training to have.
Great.
Julie, can I ask?
Sure, go ahead.
Sorry, I think the other recommendation that I would have is getting an advanced degree like a PhD or a PharmD is a very commitment-heavy experience. So I would say that I would encourage anyone who maybe doesn't have that education but is interested in this area to talk to those people who do and really understand what might be some coursework, what is their day-to-day like before jumping into that kind of advanced education. I think would be really helpful to network.
That's great. That's great guidance. Thank you both. So let's get back to Lisa. Lisa, what market dynamics have caused the explosion in the number of data sets in companies and big data and analytics?
Well, I think that probably there's a couple of market dynamics that have created. There used to be a much more difficult time to get access to data. It would sit in paper files and paper records somewhere. And with the digitization of healthcare information, that it's just much easier to get that type of information. Also, the storage of the big data and the ability to process the data has reduced those obstacles. Which is basically a supply side phenomenon. We're also seeing, though, the demand side is catching up to the supply, because I find that many of my pharmaceutical clients need to know more information. And they don't just need more individual data points, but they need to know more information about the patients that are using their particular products. What does evidence look like for the payers if they're going to come to market, it's a relatively expensive product. How are they going to demonstrate to payers the value that they can bring? We're finding that there's a lot more niche marketing going on than in the blockbuster era. So now we're trying to, instead of just finding patients who might be candidates for statins, we might need to be finding treatment-resistant patients in the cholesterol market. So there's the segments that you have to understand, even if you're in the brand team, it's very different than it was when we were in the blockbuster model. And so that drives a lot of the manufacturers to want to know an increasing amount of specificity around their target patient profiles and are they getting those patients. It also drives a lot of interesting applications that you can do with real-world data in the clinical trial space or in the real-world late-phase space that we just couldn't do 5 or 10 years ago.
Right. So it's really, and you look at the market dynamics of having, decreased resources in some ways and having to invest them wisely. So that you really need the detail of this information data to make proper decisions. And you touched on the term real-world data, and I'm going to toss this back to Victoria to kind of, how do you define real-world data?
Yeah, so I think that was a great example. To me, this real-world data, some people say, isn't all data real? And the difference to me, what makes real-world data interesting is that within our healthcare industry, it's the data that's collected outside of that standard typical clinical trial setting, meaning it's not data that's collected for safety and efficacy or regulatory submission studies necessarily. It would be rather data like the examples that Lisa had provided, maybe collected from an insurance company for the claims that are being made to that insurance company, but used in order to understand patient outcomes or the prevalence and incidence. And those prevalence and incidence, those understanding outcomes, are then the real-world insights, or sometimes what we call real-world evidence, that can be generated out of this real-world data.
Great. And Lisa, how do you think real-world data has changed the healthcare industry?
It's changed on many, many, many dimensions. So even if we look at, I think you referenced, DDD and Exponent, we've moved to a world where you can also figure out who are the doctors who have the target patient profile for your product, and those would be, interesting doctors for a manufacturer to call upon. Real-world data is getting combined with survey market research, so we don't have to ask all of the questions in the, primary market research, but we can leverage the real-world data. It's allowing us to identify doctors for educational programs in rare diseases, because we can use the history of a patient and try to identify potential patients for rare diseases, and then who are the doctors that treat them, so then we can have educational programs to inform doctors. So there's and those are just, in the commercial space. If we look at even in the R&D space, being able to look at your clinical trials and see what's going to be the impact of your inclusion-exclusion criteria on your enrollment of patients, or looking at two doctors who might seem like they're the same, but when we start to look at the patient pool that you're trying to obtain for the trial, Dr. A might be more interesting than Dr. B in terms of having the types of patients that you want.
Interesting. So improved segmentation, again, you can really drill down to those people that are going to have the most impact on your business. This would have been information I would have liked to have back in the day, and so happy that we do have it now. So now, Lisa, you've been in the industry for a few years, and how has your role, how are roles in analytics and data evolved over the course of your career?
Yeah, so my role, it's been interesting. I've had a role that was very heavy in the health economics outcomes research. Then I had a period of time that I spent in the commercial applications of real world data at a point in time that longitudinal prescription was starting to come out. Now my role tends to be more focused on how do we generate the evidence that is necessary for clinical trials, for reimbursement purposes, for your safety research that you need to do. So it's gone across a number of different areas. There's many different data types, so we spend a lot of time. I have a group of data scientists who are trying to put these data pieces together that are coming from a wide array of disparate sources. But, being able to say, well, we're going to, take this one from column A and one from column B and put it together and then be able to tell a story around rare diseases or tell a story around contracting. So I think it's gotten really interesting because there's way more data types and way more applications than when I first started my career.
And way more challenging, and you must be an extremely bright person, which you are. As I listen to you speak, my goodness. What's the most rewarding about a career in data and analytics, Victoria?
To me, I absolutely love what I do. And Lisa shared a couple of really exciting things that we in the space work on. The ability to be able to take numbers and think of it as almost another language to help us translate that business need or business question into a testable hypothesis to unlock any potential use of either those innovative technologies that now allow us to collect more data or even some of the newer analytic approaches we can use because our computing capabilities have increased dramatically over the past 10 years. That, to me, is so exciting to be able to really think about and be at the forefront of this cutting-edge information.
Great. And what's been most challenging for you in your career, Victoria?
I think like Lisa pointed out, I've got a dog here. It's really trying to keep up with that high volume of data. That's really where that big data comes into play. You might have data on thousands and millions of patients from a real-world observational study or from an insurance company. You may also then get biomarker data, so you've got now numerous biomarkers, and they're collected on patients not just at a single visit or maybe over time whenever they come into the doctor's office. So we really need a way to collect and clean this data, a place to store it, the data structure and metadata that goes along with that, and of course the analytical tools to analyze that, to combine it all with other data from other studies. That kind of data wrangling is really very tough, and that can take up a lot of time and resources.
I understand that. Lisa, do you have anything to add? What's the most challenging and rewarding in your career?
I think the most rewarding in my career is just being able to see how it's how big data has transformed a lot of the way that we can operate. That also creates a challenge because it can be require us to take on different business models or change the status quo. So it's a very fast moving. There's people who are developing new technologies, new methodologies every day, which is exciting, but also daunting to kind of, keep up with and make sure that we're using, the best of breed at the time.
Excellent. Well, ladies, this has been a really interesting conversation. And I would have to say that the advice I would give anyone going into a career of big data is you really have to have an appetite for numbers and science and be committed to the ever-changing marketplace, which is continuing to generate more and more data that we need to combine to really cull down what we need to do and how we can invest our dollars. So I want to thank both Lisa and Victoria for joining us today, ladies, and we look forward to our next podcast where we're going to explore trends in executive coaching and find out how neuroscience is being used as a tool to help develop leaders. This is Julie signing off for the HBA, and thank you again, Lisa and Victoria.
Thank you.
Thank you.